Welcome to The Sound of Economics. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and I'm pleased to bring you this podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based think tank specialized in economics and economic policy. The Sound of Economics focuses on one economic policy topic, exploring the subject in detail and looking at Bruegel work in the area. And in this episode, we will look into the future. Huge technological advancement in computer science and information systems are moving us towards the artificial intelligence era. With the creation of computing machines and systems that perform operations analogous to human learning and decision making. In particular, we will discuss the impact of artificial intelligence on our lives, covering among other issues how the new machine era will affect on employment, regulatory aspects, and policy making. To discuss that, I'm joined in this episode by four guests. I'll quickly introduce them and then we can kick off the conversation. Firstly, I'm honored to host Rob Atkinson, the founder and president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, who came to Brussels from the United States. We have also Anna Bioskaya, policy and communication advisor at the OECD. Thanks for joining us, Anna. And Merja Kyllönen, member of the European Parliament. She commutes to Brussels from rural northern Finland every week, and I'm happy she's with us for this episode. From Bruegel, we have our research fellow, Georgos Petropoulos. Rob, I'll start with you. You've been writing that given the promise that artificial intelligence holds for economic growth and societal advancement, it is critical that policymakers not only avoid retarding the progress of artificial intelligence innovation, but also actively support its further development and use. Could you elaborate more on this statement and explain what, in a nutshell, we should expect from the next potential steps of evolution of artificial intelligence?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I think the key phrase you said there was evolution. This is an evolutionary process. It's not a revolutionary process. AI has always been around. We're now in sort of the third generation of it. It's gone through these fallow or periods of what people call AI winter. It's now back in the spring or the summer, and we're making progress again. And it's really having an important impact. So, for example, language translation online is so much better than it was. You know, so I think we're going to see two big impacts of AI. One is just on improving things. So we'll have better healthcare diagnostics. We'll have better medical discovery. We'll have better environmental protection. They're using AI in Africa for poaching. They're using AI to plate where wind turbines should go to produce clean energy. So AI is going to be used to complement and give us new capabilities that prior to that were very expensive to provide. You probably could have done all of those things if you hired an army of millions of people writing things down on paper, typing them into a computer. Now you can do it through AI. So that's one part. It'll just make our lives better. That's not really what people are worried about. What the worry is, is what it's going to do to the labor market. And I think there, we should really be optimistic in the following sense. The challenge for Europe, as Bruegel has written about, is a productivity challenge. European productivity growth is very, very low. As is American. And if we're going to raise wages and living standards for Europeans, you're going to have to raise productivity. And then if you look around, what are the productivity tools? What are the paths out there? AI is going to be one of the more important ones, along with robotics, to be able to do that. The old sort of model of just mechanization, if you will, has kind of run its course. Everybody who's mechanized, who could be mechanized, is mechanized. So I think AI and robots are going to play a key role. The question is it going to be so fast that the disruption will be too great and there'll be more disruption than there is creation? I don't believe that's going to be the case. I think things tend to be slower than people believe. They see movies about it, they panic. I think it'll be slower. There will be some disruption, but I think part of the challenges we can talk about is how do we make sure that policymakers put in place the right mechanisms so that workers can make adjustments, whether it's in their company or moving to a different company.
Thank you, Rob. But notwithstanding the positive aspect that you point out, there is indeed this kind of widespread perception that artificial intelligence will destroy most jobs. Anna, I turn to you to ask, is that one of these myths to be debunked, as Rob was just mentioning, or something we should be warned about and get ready for?
Thank you. I think from a trade union perspective, there are two things to it. We shouldn't be completely ignoring the effects of AI on labor markets. We should be very wary about it. At the same time, we shouldn't believe in alarmist numbers in the same way, because they might create short-term solutions, but at the same time, they don't exactly map out what will happen to specific occupations, to tasks within occupations, which with the introduction of AI might be more relevant in some sectors. And we need to talk to both social partners, including trade unions at the firm level, to see what are the changes on jobs and who is really, will really be affected. And here we hear from our members that, yes, there are sectors where you might see more displacement coming sooner than later. And this certainly will affect some of the service sector occupations, including commerce and finance. This will include some manufacturing jobs, but then again, and this is where the trade union view on a just transition comes in, you can think about what new occupations can be created. And here we need a strong policy response, and we need technology firms to step up their responsibility when they are developing AI and other new technologies. They need to be careful about the design. They need to talk with workers' representatives, with trade unions, with policymakers, think tanks, scientists. There need to be a clear discussion about the limits of AI, because you can impose limits. You can control the level of adaptation, so to say. You don't need to be careless about it. And in the meantime, you need to act on the policy level and make sure that people either retain their jobs by clear, well-funded, revamped training strategies, by mapping out where are new occupations coming from, investing possibly in these new these new opportunities. One example is the transition to a low-carbon economy where new jobs might be created. In manufacturing, you will have roles that are about recycling, remanufacturing, old materials that are now being developed. And in many companies where you have that are subject to collective agreements and to strong social dialogue, you already have processes that are being put in place to ensure that workers have new roles in the same companies. Now, if you're a financial sector employee and you might be replaced by a big data tool that is simply faster than you in predicting certain financial transfers, there you need retraining possibly and find a new job. And here you need to be supported. And so it goes across all sectors, across all levels of skills. So we need to be careful, but not alarmist about it. At the same time, use existing systems, not weaken them. And this relates to collective bargaining, to social protection, and look at the same time at market concentration, at competition and taxation policies, because there are many regulatory opportunities there as well to distribute gains better and to ensure that there is not a disruption, but a technological diffusion with a strong social dimension, which I think is what trade unions are standing for.
Thanks. And you are right to focus on the issue of policy and policy making. And also Rob had argued before that policymakers also have a very specific role, in particular, not that they not only should avoid slowing the progress of artificial intelligence innovation, but also actively support its further development and use. So I would like to ask Maria, as member of the European Parliament, how do you see the role of legislators in this respect?
I see the role of legislator as taking care of the liability and the ethics and the limits also what can be done and what not can be done and or not should be done. And I think artificial intelligence and robotics should help people in their work, and we should make that happen, not thinking that we are going to replace all the working people with the robots or artificial intelligence. And that's the issue, that we need more information, more discussion, conversation between people, between companies, between think tanks, between all the areas, unions, people, between people. So the decision makers, we shouldn't do our decisions by what we are think to know. So we need to find out more and see what's happening right now and what can be happen and what we want to be happening in the future. And I think we need to also speak about financing, about the education, about the research works, and find a solution together with the people and with the industry, with us all, not just thinking that everything goes like in I, Robot movie. So I think it helps a lot when we start to speak out loud about these worries and about these opportunities which we have.
Thanks a lot. Yorgos, what do you think about all this?
First of all, I think that it is a very interesting topic for discussion. And I believe that through discussion of all the relevant sides and actors, we can really understand what is artificial intelligence and what will be its impact to society, to people. So that is a necessary first step to move forward, and good research studies could be very helpful in this direction. As it has already been said, the policies to be applied should be multidimensional and should target to maximize the potential benefits at a limited cost. For me, a first priority will be the educational policies that are inspired by this technological change, by the training programs. Programs could help people to adjust to the shift of employments in this new era. And this is not only a responsibility of the state, it's also a responsibility of the companies that they are in the frontier of bringing this change, technological change. So by educating correctly, by training correctly employees to adjust easily to this shift of employment that will improve, will minimize potential employment risk in the future.
Thank you. Is there any comment on this or on something that one of your colleagues has been saying before that you would like to add on?
Yeah, this is Rob. So I think one of the mistakes I think that a lot of people make in this is they sort of ascribe, I mean, it's almost we're using the wrong term, artificial intelligence. We should maybe call it artificial mediocrity, because they're not all that intelligent. I mean, these systems can do some things really, really well. If you want to know, solve pi to the 50 millionth decimal place, they can do that a lot faster than I can do it. But if they want to know, what's that thing across the room, they can't tell you that. I can tell you that's a chair. They can't tell you it's a chair. And they're not going to be able to do that for a long time. So I think we have to remember many, many human occupations are, they're pretty complicated. They do, and most workers don't do one thing. Most workers do multiple things. And so the better studies, like the McKinsey study, what it showed was that AI and robotics, they will reduce some of the tasks that individual workers do. Like for example, an office worker, a lot of what an office worker might do or a secretary or whatever is scheduling. So, with AI systems, scheduling is sort of be automatic. I'll just talk into my phone, hey, I'm meeting with Fred, and it kind of gets done. But that doesn't mean that the job is going away. They're just going to be doing other things. They might be doing, frankly, more interesting things, more valuable things to the organization. So, sure, some jobs, take the prototypical elevator operator job, you know, that went away when we did. There'll be certainly elevator job, elevator operator kinds of jobs. But for most of this, it'll be a supplement. It'll be something that will help us to continue to do our job better.
I believe we need to differentiate between different AI applications as well, because some robotics might not be at that state yet to cause a major disruption, whereas some other AI big database systems already do and are accelerating. What we need to keep in mind, I think, is both the quality of work. We need to maintain the standards that in many countries are in place for decades. We need to maintain those. We cannot take a step back from those standards. At the same time, we need to control and wealth and distribute wealth. And this is a problem that is not as tied to technology, but might be amplified because you have such a great market concentration in the digital economy. So here, if we really want to distribute the gains of new technologies, we need to look at wealth distribution and at maintaining fair wage levels. And when it comes to job destruction, if it took place, then we need to step. Then we need to have a framework in place in different countries with the right amount of funding to make sure the workers are not left behind completely, who then have the training opportunities, who have a social safety net, etc. But we need to avoid a discussion about having leisure time and not working at all, because this is, I don't think, what most people want in their life. They still need to have a purpose. And therefore, we need to see technology as an empowering tool, as Rob said, that can optimize some aspects in your work, make your work more effective, efficient, make you be able to do new tasks, other tasks. So this is what we need to strive for and not allow for some companies to completely disrupt sectors and to introduce AI systems without any standards and safeguards. And that's what we need to talk about the design and use of AI and the liability, legal and regulatory standards behind it, because this will lead ultimately to quality jobs.
Beside the issue of employment, and I'm looking at media, and the issue of how economy would change, or like the life of every single citizen might change, do you think that politics would change with artificial intelligence?
I hope. Democracy?
I hope. It should somehow, and I think as the politicians we should focus more for the possibilities, going from the always from the risk-based analysis to the possibilities-based analysis or closing, not forgetting the risks, but checking out that like a little child. Checking out what can be done, what's there, what's new, what are the possibilities which could help our daily life, human beings' daily life, and then check out what are the risks, what need to be tackled. And I think we could find a great solution for the Europe and for the whole wide world if we could be, as a politicians, like a little child, checking out what is happening in the world, and could we help people with it, and then take out the risks and give better education for the people and so on.
Thank you. And Georgos, do you want to add something to this?
Yes, I fully agree with Rob that when we are talking about artificial intelligence and its impact, we should first of all define what is artificial intelligence. And that is the only way we can move forward, by specifying what will be the potential developments, benefits, and probably risks. I would say that there are three different pillars in the definition. The one is the robotics. The other is the machine learning. And the third is the data. The data helps machines to learn through examples. And this learning is applied to robots in order to pursue specific tasks. And that is the difference. I mean, the cognitive dimension, the multi-dimension of human beings that do multiple tasks even at the same time cannot be compared with a robot that it is designed for a specific task. Yes, a robot can be a much better chess player than a human being, but is designed only to do that, and that is the only function and dimension. So we need to keep in mind this substantial difference between human beings and robots through this artificial intelligence mechanism when we are talking about their future impact and whether human beings are at risk from them.
Thank you. We are going through almost towards the end of this episode, and I would like to recall the fact that back in 1872, Samuel Butler was the first to write about the possibility that machines might develop consciousness by a sort of Darwinian selection. That was done in his novel called Erewhon. Many dismissed this back then as a joke. But in 2017, as Giorgos just said, we are not surprised anymore about the principle of machines that can learn. And if we think about it, all our discussion about the future of artificial intelligence revolves around this possibility. So to conclude, I would like to ask you to make an exercise of imagination. Let's imagine for a moment that we can jump in a time machine and record the end of our episode from the year 2172. We are there in 2172 now, and each of you has the chance to tell to our listeners back in 2017 what will be the one striking feature that the evolution of artificial intelligence will bring us. What would that be? You have one thing to choose for each of you. Who would like to start?
Well, first of all, I think the history of prediction shows that it's impossible to predict things. I mean, we can never, ever do it. But what the heck? I think it's going to be the human brain, the computer interface, and sort of your brain is enabled by and augmented by technology, potentially even kind of at the sort of improvements of humans at the genetic level with CRISPR and things like that. I'm not afraid of that. I think, and again, if there are rules, if there's frameworks for how society governs that, that could ultimately be good. I think we're also going to be living in a world where we're going to look back at the world we live in and go, how did those people ever live like that? I can't believe there was that much poverty. And by poverty, I mean the middle class standards of living that we all enjoy. I think people living at that time will be living just so much, much better lives. The environment will be cleaner. There'll be more public amenities. Frankly, the other thing that I think will happen is I completely agree that people need to work for human dignity and purpose, but we'll work less. We'll have more time. And sort of as Marx at one point famously talked about, you'd be a cow herder in the morning and an artist in the afternoon. There'll be more of that. I think people will be able to pursue their own self-actualization, their own dreams more. A lot of people might want to be artists, musicians, all things like that.
Interesting question. Fortunately, I have watched many movies. So I would believe that technology by then will bring more efficiency in job tasks. That means that we'll complete some job tasks in much shorter time. That will lead us to undertake more responsibility over other tasks because we will use machines to delegate those tasks in order to perform some particular actions. And probably that will make us to use the machines in our benefits, with many efficiencies to be distributed across all the market and economy players.
Thank you very much, and that brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics, and thanks to all of my guests. If you are interested in more Bruegel work on digital innovation, you can find a range of blogs and papers on our website at www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again for The Sounds of Economics. Thank you, goodbye.